There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 622, April 11th, 2013. Nas.
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by your neighborhood Panda Express. Grab some Beijing beef and chop chop, enjoy the Grand Prix in Shanghai.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Sebastian Vettel says Weber deserves nothing, and I'll do it again. Kimi Raikkonen already rumored to replace the infamous Mark Weber at Red Bull, and Ferrari's Fernando Alonso says he will follow orders. And of course, we've got Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Nasser Hamid, and another fantastic episode from Tim, the tech dude, Tim Schwartz.
Nas? Tech talk from Tim, it's called.
Tech talk from Tim. Thanks. Welcome to the studio, Nasser. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Good to see you again. And as usual, the atmosphere is very loving for Formula One in the Palatial Studios. We have Formula Uno. Chop Chop is the story of Mark Webber ever since Sebastian Vettel joined that team. What say you?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And now Vettel, of course, you know, they're all in China right now. We're getting ready for the Grand Prix de Chine. And of course, in beautiful downtown Shanghai, where anything is very, very hard to see because there's so much smog, but still, what a loving and passionate crowd for motorsports.
Yeah, you know, the story that I heard, it's a rumor that once upon a time before Sebastian Vettel joined Red Bull from Toro Rosso, Christian Horner took both drivers to a Chinese restaurant in Milton Keynes. When Weber opened his fortune cookie, it says, "You will have a fast teammate soon."
That's so touching and beautiful.
It is.
Poor Mark Webber. But still, a Vettel coming out in the press on Thursday in China saying, you know what, in the end, I'll probably do it again because Mark Webber hasn't done anything to help me out. So in other words, this guy now is vicious, he's mean, he's Teutonic, and he's going for the Blitzkrieg on Formula One.
You think he should just shave off his beard and just leave a little mustache?
See, I never said that. But I think he's listening to German marching music and Wagner.
Well, they're already making references to German-Austro alliance and what damage that can do. But, you know, talking strictly motor racing, I'm not surprised. You know what happens? A good driver always knows how good he is. And especially if you're in the same team. And I've said this many times before, I'll say it one more time. When this kid joined Red Bull, there was an interview shown long before the season started. It was like, garden or backyard or whatever. He's sitting there on a sofa with Mark Webber. And it's just the confidence, what you can call it, arrogance, or whatever you want to call it. But it just looked like, you know, first thing out of his mouth was, first person you want to beat is your teammate. So he came with an agenda, he's racing with an agenda, and yeah, he's right, he's going to do it again. Lewis Hamilton is on the same program. I think Alonso, if he's in the position, he will do the same thing. We all know what Senna and Schumacher were capable of. The only real good guys are people like Massa, Jenson, Button. And I'm going to tell you, if they are in a very feisty competitive mood and championship is at stake, their true colors will also come out. So with some drivers, it comes out first few races, first few seasons. Some other people, it takes time. But Robin Miller loves to say hate is good for racing. So let's see what happens.
I agree. No, I do think hate is good for racing. Other people are saying that Mark Webber is beginning to prepare his finale in Formula One. In other words, his retirement at the end of the season. And just recently, one of your favorite restaurants in
Stag.
The UK, the Stag, was shut down. Nobody got paid. And there's rumors that his home in England is also up for sale. He's bought a new home in Australia with a big jacuzzi. Lots of preparation for no more UK for Mark Webber. What do you think this points to?
Well, you know, he's from Australia, so him going back home will not be a surprise when his racing days are over. Has been very successful, great guy, good guy from all angles we hear about him. And it's, you know, it would have been good for the sport had he won the championship, you know, first Australian world champion since 1980. But, you know, he's done what he could do, and now I think it will be good to go out gracefully, even though, you know, he's under fire from all sides. And the thing is, you know, if there are 20 races in a season and they have a competitive car, Sebastian Vettel knows that the call from Mark Webber saying not bad for a number two driver may come two or three times in a season. You know what I'm saying? And he's going to win majority of the races anyway. I mean, the guy won, I think, gave Red Bull the first win in only his third start, if I recall correctly. So, you know, I don't want this thing going out in a very bad, like, Reutemann and Jones situation or the Alonso and Hamilton situation, even though it makes up a good headline. But I would like to see this guy go out gracefully, win a few races. But can he beat Sebastian Vettel in a straight fight over a course of season? That would be like Nico Rosberg beating Lewis Hamilton. Most probably will not happen. Can't guarantee that.
But we'll see what happens. Now, of course, Kimi Raikkonen is the man who's going to be on the market. He has no contract. Top teams may want this young whippersnapper, who's not so young anymore, but still fast out of the box, no nonsense. He might even be perfect to challenge our friendly friend with the small mustache.
Well, Kimi Raikkonen doesn't need a contract. He is the contract. He's going to do what he wants to do. And, you know, when he was in WRC, Red Bull was his sponsor, and he is the right man for them. You know, he's not going to say anything. He's not going to call not good for a number two or number one. He could care less. But I would love to see that. And that's, it's like at the end of 1987 when McLaren hired a driver from Lotus. I made a comment to my friend. He says, now we're going to find out how good the professor is. So it's the same thing with Sebastian Vettel. Great, great racing talent. I mean, what can I say? You know, he's on his way to super greatness in Formula One history. But when he has a Kimi Raikkonen or a young kid from Stephen H. by the name of LCH, then we're going to find out how good Sebastian Vettel is.
It's going to be exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Because there's no way Lotus has the capital to compete with a Red Bull in terms of...
No, nobody has the capital of Red Bull.
No.
The only people who could compete were, you know, major manufacturers like Honda, Toyota, and BMW, but they're gone.
Absolutely. And knowing Kimi, really, he's not the kind of guy who goes super loyal, huggy-huggy, lovey-lovey. He's going to say, you know what, big paycheck, here I come.
Yeah.
And that's it. Finlandia by the stacks.
Oh, and frankly, I won't be surprised if he rattled Vettel's cage. Not saying he's going to completely overpower him, but, you know, if the guy is used to winning 8 to 10 races, now you're winning 4 or 5 races, you got a huge problem.
No.
And you can ask your friend about these things, you know.
My buddy?
Yeah, you speak Spanish, so he can explain to you.
That's true, Fernando.
Via el texto.
Grazie. But still, anyway, Ferrari, Fernando Alonso, of course, they have a lot to make up after that disaster. They are pumped up. China has been good to Fernando. We'll see what happens here. But Fernando has also come out with the controversy because of team orders. And he said he would follow team orders. In other words, we know now that Massa has outqualified Fernando Alonso, could be in for some kind of run, perhaps even a win. Will Fernando relinquish the reins to Felipe Massa is my big question. Or will Dominic Cali say no, 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 no? What do you think?
I was going through the web, and it was like one of those tweet type thing. I did not go into details, but I've heard similar stuff before. I get the impression Luca has more love for Nando than he had for Schumacher. And if you take into account the guy won 5 championships in a row for Ferrari, this guy has yet to win, at least, you know, for sure, if not morally, then they obviously have a lot of stake in this guy. They want this guy to win. And the only orders Alonso will ever get would be like, stay 5 seconds ahead of Massa or don't extend your lead. I think they're going to help this guy. I mean, the guy is very good, so it does, you know, he doesn't need their help, but every now and then they will. And then, you know, Rob Smedley will be calling.
Like, exactly. I think we'll hear a lot from Mr. Smedley. Anyway, it's going to be a great race. The only thing that I'm really curious about is, can Mercedes repeat that wonderful 3-4 finish where team orders were in play? Nico Rosberg sort of has to show that he can beat LCH. LCH felt bad on the podium about not moving over and letting his faster teammate go by. And Ross Brawn coming out in the press, and I thought this was hilarious, saying that it didn't feel natural to have team orders when he worked with Schumacher and Irvine and Please and Rubinho, of all people, where team orders were the name of the game. So yeah. What is Ross Brawn trying to prove in his final years in Formula One?
Well, you know, the track record is there, so can't argue with success. But moving forward, I mean, they won this race last year. Will they repeat? You know, I think Red Bull is way too strong. But it will be, you know, the only thing I think, let's say they develop the package during the season and Rosberg loses the championship by a point or two. Do you think he's going to think about Malaysia then? So let's see what happens. And I would like to see Mercedes get to a point that where they can challenge Red Bull, and LCH is quite the hustler, as we all know.
He is so, quite the hustler. The car looked good in Malaysia, and they were managing the tire wells, and they were catching up with the Red Bulls. If they had more laps, it could have happened. Now, the other disappointment for me in Malaysia was Lotus. Kimi just didn't have the same pace he had in the first race of the season. It's starting to remind me of Nick Heidfeld at Lotus replacing Kubica on the podium in Australia, and then it just went downhill from there.
Well, you know, they have to have the right package, and like you said, they just don't have the money to develop the car, nor do they have Adrian Newey, you know. But I think they will sort this car out for a few tracks, and I will not be surprised if we see Kimi winning more races, at least maybe another 2 or 3 races, if not 10 races. That's, but you know, I would like to see Romain Grosjean, who is also a very good driver, at least get a win. So otherwise, he's just going to look, you know, the Swiss Barrichello or the French Irvine.
Well, the biggest problem with Romain Grosjean, he's clearly a number two. He's getting secondhand parts. We know that Kimi Räikkönen had the Kawanda exhaust on his Lotus, while Grosjean did not. So he's getting the good stuff. Very reminiscent to Vettel and Webber.
Yeah, what, you know, team and crew member will always gravitate towards the faster driver. And being second best to Raikkonen is not a bad deal as long as you're competitive. But I do feel it's one of those things, you know, it's Webber and Vettel and, you know, Kovalainen and Hamilton. It's just very, very hard. That is your problem, your teammate.
Well, I think Grosjean, really, he should just focus on being consistent, staying out of trouble, and getting points and finishing races. Yeah. If he can do that, I think that's going to accomplish a lot, especially if Raikkonen does go to Red Bull. Grosjean shows he's got some maturity. He's grown.
Testicular fortitude.
Exactly. And this could point to him being number one at a team where they would bring in a junior francophilic young driver.
Yeah, if he can finish in the top 8 in the championship, that would mean a lot of points for him and the team. I think then, you know, if you have a top 8 finish in a championship with a decent car, you're probably confirming your stay in Formula One, even if Eric Bouyer loses love for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I think it'll be a tragedy if Lotus loses Kimi Räikkönen. But if Grosjean could show maturity, like I said, then he could have a good 2014 season with a new Renault package, and they could take on D'Ambrosio or a Felix da Costa and hopefully get some points in 2014. Between 2014 is going to be a huge new event for everyone.
Well, talking of Felix da Costa, who is from Dr. Miguel's home country, Portugalistan, you know, he will be the Red Bull reserve driver in China. This guy is very good talent, and I think what Red Bull is doing is pushing him just like they pushed through the system with Antonio Liuzzi and Jaime Alguersuari. I just hope they don't burn this kid. I mean, you know, just let him go and maybe do a season of GP2 and then bring him into Formula 1. But, you know, Dr. Marco is going to do what he wants to do. But I would hate to see another good talent get burnt out by, you know, expedited service.
Well, the other big problem is now with these Kimi Raikkonen rumors swirling around the paddock, the two young drivers at Toro Rosso with aspirations of making it to the Papa team, mm-hmm. all of a sudden, those start fizzling away. Can that cause frustration? Because Toro Rosso seems to have a good car, both drivers very evenly matched, and finishing with some points in both races. So, can this Kimi Raikkonen rumor cause frustration at Toro Rosso?
I would say yes and no. Yes, because they would like that seat, but no, because they know, you know, Jean-Éric Vergne does not have the speed or the experience of Kimi Raikkonen, and same can be said for Daniel Ricciardo. One thing I will say about Daniel Ricciardo, I've spoken to quite a few drivers who raced against him and some, like, you know, team people also. They have a very, very high opinion of this kid as a race car driver, and the result speaks for themselves. And as far as Jean-Éric Vergne is concerned, this kid, when we were all talking about Gutierrez and Rossi and Bianchi, this and that, all these young whip Fabio Limers of the world, he was nowhere even on the radar. The guy comes in British F3, wins 13 races. They throw him, Red Bull throws him in World Series by Renault. In first four races, he was like on the podium like three races. I mean, tremendous talent. And so he's very good. And talking of French drivers, and it's just like, you know, Nando made his point with Minardi. And you all you have to do is read ever, if you get a chance, an interview with Paul Stoddart, what he thinks of Nando when he was at Minardi, Senna at Tolman, Schumacher at Jordan. Jules Bianchi is making a lot of impression. He's being written up everywhere. They're talking about he might go to Ferrari because he is under contract to Nicolas Todd. So cream will rise to the top. If it cannot come to the top and it's with Minardi, it will at least make a brief appearance and knock on the door, you know. Okay. So it's good to see good talent being rewarded.
No, absolutely. And I was disappointed that he didn't get the Force India drive, but I'm really happy he didn't fade away.
Yeah, that's what it looked like. And, you know, when he went from 2 years of GP2 into World Series by Renault, his own comment was that if you do third year and you don't win, you're finished. And talking of aspiration, this is beautiful. I don't know what to say. I thought I should not say anything, but I'll just say it in a positive way. Susie Wolf, previously known as artist, formerly known as Susie Stoddart, she is hoping for a Formula One seat.
Absolutely, and as test driver for Williams, having
terrible. No, she wants to get into on the grid for a race.
Yeah, I understand that. Well, the way Pastor Maldonado has been finishing these races and getting into the gravel. Valtteri Bottas, great talent, but has Williams taken a few steps backwards in this car? This car is starting to remind me of the Ralf Schumacher and Alex Zanardi season in 1999.
Yes, looks like they are definitely on a slippery slope as compared to last year, which is kind of disappointing because, you know, when Pastor won over Nando in Spain, that really shut up a lot of people. And Bottas is also very good talent, so we would like to see this team a little bit more competitive. That would be good. Maybe Susie can turn in some hard laps, no pun intended.
Exactly. And Susie is easy on the eyes.
Oh, yeah. I just asked Mr. Wolf.
Exactly. Caterham, they obviously have to do something with the Renault package. I cannot believe Marussia with a Cosworth. It's giving them trouble. I mean, they should be out qualifying Marussia on a daily basis. They should be getting in the top 14, and they just can't seem to do it.
Mike Gascoigne is going to help them get there.
You think so?
Like he helped Toyota and Renault and everybody else. I don't know what the deal is.
What an overrated tech guy. I don't care what anybody says. I think Tim Schwartz could do a better job than that guy.
And his Uruguayan aerodynamist.
Absolutely.
Or the composite specialist.
Yes, yes. So, I don't know. I'm very disappointed with Caterham. I thought they would do well. And it just doesn't seem to be fizzling.
Well, there's a lot of interest in Formula One and success story behind Tony Fernandez. Mike Gascoigne, you know, like you said, talked about quite a bit. Now they have merged with Caterham Car Company, Renault. They had have some sort of alliance and blah, blah, blah. So they have all the tools to make this happen. And who do they have? Guido van der Garde. He has a lot of experience and just not impressing too much.
No, I agree. And well, to be honest with you, the package is so bad. Even a seasoned driver like Heikki Kovalainen got nowhere there.
Yeah.
So obviously they're saving a little bit of money with these new young drivers. I think it's a great idea until you sort things out. But certainly it's got to be frustrating when you have the support of Renault. But that doesn't mean very much because look at Williams.
Yeah, but even, you know, Guido van der Garde and Charles Pic. Charles Pic is the other driver, right?
Correct.
Yeah, they are pretty quick drivers. I mean, they have a lot of experience in World Series by Renault and GP2. So it's not that they have slouches there, but the car is very, very disappointing.
It is very.
Looks very good, though, the paint scheme and all that. It looks good, but it's not happening.
Fantastic. Any predictions for China, Nas?
Well,
it's going to be exciting.
Yes. You know what one of the headlines says? We're going to have Red Bulls in our China shop. And we know who is steaming.
Yeah, but the problem is those Red Bulls in the China shop, you know what they say?
Tell me.
If you broke it, you bought it.
Yeah, well, you know, both of them have a lot of money. So I want to see good battle. You know, let's get rid of this team order situation. You know, it's one of those things, you know, if you're tired, it's like with Lewis Hamilton, you know, he can catch up. He's a hustler. But, you know, if he's going to put on an impressive display and wear out his tires and then fall back three positions in the last two laps, you know, that's his problem.
What?
You know, so I don't want to see team orders. I want to see a good race. And, you know, the way the stewards act now, if you do silly things blocking this and that, they will penalize you.
Well, I know one thing for sure. Weber is going to be on a vendetta. He's bitter. And after what Sebastian Vettel said in the press, that Weber has never helped him, he deserves nothing, he didn't deserve the win, I'm telling you, he is steaming, he's boiling inside. He will need therapy for years after this season in Formula One. But if there's an opportunity to deny our friend with the small mustache, it could happen, and Weber could be giggling.
You know, Sebastian just might show up on Thursday press conference with a mustache.
He could. Well, yeah. He never shaves anymore. He wants that, yeah. You know, that...
No, that small mustache will go.
That would be beautiful.
You are number swai, I'm telling you.
Hak-tung! Okay, that's wonderful, Nas. Anyway, we got an outstanding Motorsports Mondial. A lot of good stuff happening.
And we have an interview with one of your homeboys. Don't forget that.
My homeboy?
Yeah, Tom Dillman. I know you don't think it's a French name, but the guy is very Francais.
I have to check his passport, Nas.
Yes,
you so can do that. We have a special interview with Tom Dillman. We've got tech tips.
No, tech talk from Tim.
Tech talk from Tim. You know, all these T's. I'm dotting the I's, but the T's are confusing me.
Yes. There is no I in team, remember?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Weber. Keep up the good work. Anyway, so, yes, we've got a lot of goodies coming up. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Thank you.
Honesty is something we all look for, especially when it comes to auto service. Honest Engines Auto Service Tallahassee is where you'll find it. Since 2005, they've been delivering trusted, dependable service to Florida's capital. Honest Engines is your full-service auto repair center. Bumper to bumper, they have you covered. Honest Engines Auto Repair offers a variety of services. Transmission repair, oil change service, and much, much more. Don't let just anyone work on your car. Bring it to Honest Engines. They'll give your baby the care it deserves. They work closely with you to make sure you know what's being done. With Honest Engines, you don't have to guess what their team is doing. Their highly experienced and certified technicians know just what your car needs, and they'll make sure you do too. So if you're in the Tallahassee area and you need auto repairs, give Honest Engines a call. 850-421-8461. And tell them F1Weekly.com sent you. Honest Engines Auto Repair. Right on the corner, right on the price. 718 Gay Street, Tallahassee.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Greetings and racing regards. Yamaha 1-2 in MotoGP, Andretti Autosports 1-2 in IndyCars, and touche to Mark Webber for closing his restaurant in Ye's neighborhood. That's pretty sad news.
That was pretty sad news.
Yeah, but, you know, Mr. Brazier and I had the honor of going there in our European support vehicle number one, so at least we can say we've been there. Food was pretty good and decent pricing, but Mark was missing, so it was still a good experience. Shall we start with racing on two wheels, sir?
Indeed.
Well, the 2013 MotoGP season got underway under the lights at the Losail Circuit in beautiful and dusty Qatar. Let me tell you, once I flew Qatar Airways through their Doha airport, when the plane was landing, I couldn't see anything. I was so dusty, and the amazing thing was, it's next thing you know, the plane has landed, and you could not see anything, not the airport building, not the other plane. So that can be a serious dust bowl.
But they do land in the middle of a dust storm.
Oh, yeah.
That's exciting.
Oh, yeah. I was like, you know, when are we going to land? I was hoping to see something. Next thing you know, the plane touches down.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So Jorge Lorenzo was the winner from pole position. His, what he would call Yamaha teammate, Valentino Rossi, held off a strong challenge late in the race from MotoGP debutant Marc Marquez on a Honda to finish second. Danny Pedrosa was fourth. He is the master of MotoGP. Good enough to win races, but little short of winning the big prize. But the Repsol Honda colors that used to be on Carlos Sainz Toyota, they are beautiful. A very nice paint scheme. Nicky Hayden was the top Amerikanski in eighth, just behind teammate Andrea Dovizioso. Andrea Dovizioso, yeah, that is correct. Any interest in MotoGP for
Love
you
MotoGP.
This season?
Love MotoGP. But I can't do everything, Nasser. I'm a busy man, and management of the F1 Weekly Empire is time-consuming.
Yeah, this empire is going to go on for a long time.
A few times.
Hopefully.
Hopefully. At least as long as the Roman Empire.
Yeah, exactly. Monza Autodromo World Series by Renault. Impressive debut win from pole for Stoffel Vandoorne of Belgium. He won the Formula Renault Euro Cup last year. That would be the Formula Renault 2-liter. And is now on the McLaren Junior program. Very impressive. Another McLaren Junior, Kevin Magnussen, was second, with Christopher Zanella of Switzerland third. Second race of the weekend was won by Dr. Marco's latest love child, Antonio Felix da Costa. Kevin Magnussen was again second. Vandoorne completed a great weekend by appearing on the podium again in third. And Stoffel Vandoorne is now leading the championship. Fourth was Arthur Peak, younger brother of Charles Peak of F1 fame. Did you know that?
Exciting.
Yeah. Sweet home Alabama, where the sky is blue and the government is true. The grand marshal there was Bo Jackson, which was interesting. All three previous races were won by Team Penske. This time, it was not to be. This is a fantastic track. You know, when this track first opened some years ago, I was watching flipping through the channel, and I saw this motorcycle race going on. And I said, man, what a beautiful track. And I couldn't, with the turns, I couldn't figure out what track it is. I'm thinking it's some European track. And then I see the usual signs, Miller, Budweiser, you know, John Deere, Caterpillar.
Skoll.
Yeah, exactly. And so I said, no, this has to be a US track. And then they mentioned, you know, welcome to the new Birmingham or whatever it's called, in the Barber Motorsports. Beautiful, beautiful facility. Would you like to go there someday, sir?
Oh, I would. And that's where Ken Anderson's USF1 was supposed to test.
I think they tested already.
Did they test?
Yeah. It was like...
It was just too fast.
Yeah. What happened? They had the chassis was built by Northrop, so it was stealth. Nobody saw it except...
That was the problem.
Yeah, it was stealth, only seen by spatial glasses.
Keep up the good work. And that's interesting that they had Bo Jackson. Now, we're talking the same... Bo Jackson, baseball player, football player, hip replacements.
Yeah, yeah. They asked him what is more exciting, running over Brian Bosworth or riding in a two-seater Indy car with Ari Leundai. So that was good. Ryan Hunter-Reay was the winner for Michael Andretti's team. The season opener in St. Pete, Florida, was won by another Andretti driver, James Hinchcliffe. St. Peter of Petersburg, Florida, street course, fantastic avenue. I mean, beautiful. If you ever see the aerial photograph, I mean, they should have a U.S. East Grand Prix there, in just my personal opinion. Okay. James Hinchcliffe, like we said, won the opening race. He lasted only 3 laps of the Barber Circuit. Scott Dixon of Ganassi team was second, with Penske pilot Castro Neves third. Sato-san was 14th for AJ Foyt's team. Now, that's a match made in Mesquite heaven. AJ Foyt and Takuma Sato.
That's so beautiful. How did Simone de Silvestra do?
She did very well. She's very competitive. And, of course, you know, she almost won the Atlantic Championship, something that cannot be said for some other driver. Okay, now I am also told, even by Clive Chapman, son of Colin Chapman, that the motorcycle collection at the museum at the Barber Motorsports is absolutely fantastic. I even heard some of the drivers say that. So this is something, you know, I may have to check out in the near future. Indy Lights, also at the same venue, two Colombians on the podium with Jack Hawksworth of UK in second. Carlos Munoz was the winner from pole, and compadre Gabi Chavez was third. Some new signings for the Indy 500 next month. Connor Daly will race at the Brickyard with Foyt's team, and Ryan Briscoe is trying to make a one-race appearance in the big show for Ganassi Racing. And now we take the train to Marrakesh for WTCC and AutoGP. Winner in World Touring Car Championship Round 1 was Michel Nukier in a Chevrolet, with ex-F1 driver Gabriel Tarquini second in a Honda. Race 2 was won by 18-year-old Spaniard Pepe Oriola in a Seat, the youngest winner in the series history. Ivan Muller, your homeboy from Alsace region, was second in his Chevrolet. The opening race in AutoGP was won by Sergio Campana. Kimiya Sato was second. Second race of the weekend was won by Luciano Bacchetta of UK. Vittorio Girelli was second, and Kimiya Sato was third. And Luciano Bacchetta, it sounds very Italian, right? And if you look at this kid, you'll get the impression he's from Sicily. But his parents are of Indian origin. And there's a nice article on him on pitpass.com if anybody's interested in reading about him. Now we go to your favorite series, sir.
Le NASCAR.
It was a case of... Can you do that one more time, please?
Le NASCAR.
So beautiful. JJ in VA. Jimmy Johnson won the NASCAR race at Martinsville in his Lowe's Chevrolet, fueled by Sunoco and going round and round on Goodyear circles. I'm hoping he'll pick up some sponsorship from NASCAR sponsors. You never know. This could be the Sprint Podcast for all I know.
It could, one day.
Yeah. This was win number 8 at this track for the man from El Cajon near San Diego, which is, of course, Jimmy Johnson's hometown. Clint Boyer was second in his Toyota, or as they say in Argentina, Toyota. And Jeff Gordon was third in his Chevy. Marcus Ambrose was 8th. Your favorite, Greg Biffle, was 9th. Miss Patrick was 12th. Her Daytona pole is now a shining memory. No pun intended there. Monty was 26th. You know, Danica Patrick was on pole at Daytona. Okay. Here is a series for talent like Jimmy Johnson, the Bush brothers, Tony Stewart. It looked very impressive. Okay. Now she is nowhere near the pole. But will it surprise you if she's on the pole at another high-profile race like the Brickyard 400 or the Firecracker 400, which is the July race in at Daytona?
Are you telling me something?
I'm asking a question.
Well, I think there is something sneaky, but yeah, I believe you. It's called sponsorship. It's called the dollar.
Yes. Okay, sir. Now, also, you know, GP3 will race in Valencia at the Ricardo Tormo circuit. So this will be like a one-off deal, not with GP2 and Formula Uno. In other news, you know, talking of ladies, Patrick and Susie Wolf. You know, there's a lady, we've reported on her a few times, young 18-year-old, Betske Visser. She's from the Netherlands. She has now been inducted into the Red Bull program. And I think she has done very well in karting. And she was racing in a series called Formula ADAC, ADAC in Germany, which is like a Formula 2-liter car, something like that. And did pretty decent. I think this girl is very quick, like Simone de Silvestro on the track. And there is another Dutch, you know this guy, Robin Vriens, who won 3 championships in a 3-row. He's Dutch. And there's another guy from the Netherlands, young kid, Nick de Vries. He's in Formula Renault, Euro Cup. I think these people will do very well. Other names to watch this year in Junior Formula, as most of these series are now starting or have just started, Stoffel Vandoorne, Kevin Magnussen, and Antonio Felix da Costa. They are all racing in World Series by Renault, Formula Renault 3.5. I will not be surprised at all if Felix da Costa wins the championship. And Kevin Magnussen, he's in his second year. He really needs to fight for the championship, and he's a good talent. I think he will. And Stoffel Vandoorne, man, if he can pull off a championship success in his first year, just like Robin Vriens, against other talented driver and experienced driver, it will do him very good. Now in GP2, or as we say here,
Rapidos,
battle of the veterans between Stefano Coletti and Fabio Laimer. I think both these youths are in their fourth year of GP2, and both are pretty quick. And the tussle between 2 second-year drivers, which I'm following with a lot of interest, James Calado, who's from UK, and cousin Felipe Nasser from Brazil. And I think the rookie to watch this year could be Daniel Abt. Last year as a rookie, he almost won the GP3 title. And let's see what happens. It's a long, long season. Now, Jack Hawksworth racing young junior Formula on this side of the pond. Jack Hawksworth in Indy Lights, where he won the season opener in St. Pete. I think he's the man headed for a future. Now, this is one of those things, you know, if this guy wins this championship, 2 championship and 2 rookie season, I frankly will not be surprised if that happened, that he gets a call from Roger Penske people or Chip Ganassi, because success breeds success.
Not from Eric Bouliguer?
No. I think because of the age, and he's winning on this side of the pond. The only way a Formula team will call somebody who's racing here, if they win, 15 of 20 races. But that thing, you know, that has been done, you know. J.R. Hildebrand won a lot of races in Formula Renault. But then people, you know, if you do the same thing in British Formula 3 or World Series by Renault, if you have a dominating performance, people are going to say, who was your talent? What was the talent, the competition like? I mean, you know, like some years ago, I think it was 2 years ago when they had Rossi, Wickens, and several other top-line drivers, Jean-Eric Van Ricciardo in World Series by Renault. If you're winning against heavy talent, that will help. But winning against Carlos Munoz and, Daniel Tarantula, that's not going to get you a call from Luke.
Of course.
Would you call a guy who wins a lot of races against drivers you've never heard of, if you were in charge of Renault Motorsports?
I would never do that.
You would only call guys who have names like Jean-Pierre and, you know, Enrique de la Traz, right?
Exactly.
Yes, sir. Okay. In Formula One, our man, gentleman we've been following for many years, Jules Bianchi, is already impressing a lot of people. And I'm sure, moving forward, Sebastian Vettel will remain on the Lola program. The song, not the car.
Whatever Lola wants, Lola gets.
So there you have it for Motorsports Mondial. Any thoughts on in the world of motorsports that you would like to say or speak out or whatever?
Well, I think Juan Pablo Montoya is a big disappointment, but he loves the hot dogs. So 26 means nothing. He gets to go home to Miami and have sausages.
Yes. You know, when I'm talking of him, I was at Daytona for the 24-hour race. I saw his brother, Federico Montoya, and at one time, he was racing in Formula BMW, but the two apples, you know, they're from the same tree. One went in the right direction, the other went and started circling. So he's still circling.
Absolutely outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Thanks again, Nasser. And now, let's introduce this fine French gentleman.
Tom Dillman, young Francais from the Alsace region, which is also home to Mr. Loeb of WRC fame, Ivan Müller. Tom is a talented driver who has been in and out of racing due to sponsorship issues. This season, he is having the Russian time of his life. And the interesting thing about him, he comes back and is successful very quickly, wins a race or is in the top 3 very quickly. So I'm hoping that he enjoys his Russian time and gets the success he deserves. And so please enjoy the conversation. And for more info, visit his website. Thank you, Mr. Tom, and thank you, listeners.
Okay, folks, I'm here with a talented young Frenchman, Mr. Tom Dillman. Tom, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Really good. Looking forward to race 2.
How did the race 1 in Sepang go for you?
Not so good. Many things went wrong. The pace was really good. I was running P6. Then we had a long pit stop, a drive-through. So, a bit disappointing, but we'll do better today.
I've been following your career for a few years. You are in out because of sponsorship issues. This year you're with Russian Time. Tell us how this deal came together and what is the deal for the full season or what's going on.
Yeah, I struggled many years with budget issues, so I could never do a full season. I got opportunities there, and like that I managed to step by step to go to GP2. And this season I got a last minute deal with Russian Time for the full season. It was quite unexpected. I was honestly trying to do another championship like Porsche Super Cup to try and be professional, because single seater budget is so high that it was unrealistic. And I was invited to the test in RRS with Ilmer. It went very well. Then I was invited to test with Russian Time. It went well, and so I got the drive.
Russian Time means, does that mean a lot of free vodka?
I don't know, vodka, Kalashnikov.
Kalashnikov? Wow, you're on the right track, boy. Okay, a question for you. Tell us a little bit about your early... How did you get involved in motor racing? Was there interest in the family, or is this something you picked up on your own?
Yeah, my father was racing. He was, but he was doing everything. He was building his own car, driving as well. So, I was born on racetrack, let's say. So, when my father stopped, when I was 10, then I started to race.
Okay. And how long were you in karting?
Only 3 years.
These days, drivers do a lot in many years, 5-6 years in karting. You're 3 years in karting. Was that enough for you, or do you think you should have stayed a few more years in karting?
Actually, because my father had experience in with race cars and not so much in go-karts, we decided to go to single-seater quite early. So I was always doing it with my father, you know, go-karts. And then my first year in single-seater was also with my father, because it was easier for him to run a car than a go-kart, actually. So, that's why at 14 I was in a single-seater already.
Now, when you switched from karting to single-seater, did you find the adjustment very hard, or was it the same thing for you?
Well, it was not really hard. No.
No problem? Okay. No. Now, you spent 3 years in 2004 to 2006 in Formula Renault. Tell us who were the drivers you raced against and what were your high points when you were in Formula Renault?
I raced with Baguette, with you know Baguette from...
Bertrand Baguette. He's very tasty.
Yeah, you know him from IndyCar, I guess, so that's why I say him. Yeah, I mean, Buemi, Aguirre-Zoari, all those guys, you know, Grosjean.
Who did you, when you were racing against those guys, who did you think was really quick?
I would say Grosjean and Hülkenberg.
Hülkenberg? Now, in those days, I'm sure Grosjean was Swiss.
He was Swiss in Formula Renault and French in F3. Yeah.
Yeah, I find that very interesting. Okay. Now, when you stepped up to F3 Euro Series, obviously a very big series in those days, even now, how big was the challenge and the depth of competition for you compared to days in Formula Renault?
Yeah, EuroCup Formula Renault was already a high-level championship with 35 cars, you know. But the Euro Series at this time was the highest-level series for young drivers. That was all the Red Bull, Toyota, Renault, Mercedes drivers. I was the youngest driver. I was 18. But it went okay. I had 3 podiums. Unfortunately, at the beginning of the season, I had a big crash. I broke my sternum and 2 vertebrae, so I was 2 months on the sideline. I missed the first race. The season went okay for a rookie. It was good.
What caused your accident? Driver error, somebody crashing, or a mechanical issue?
Just a crash in testing.
Pretty simple. Okay, now you switched from F3 Euro Series to German F3. Was that because of sponsorship issues?
Yeah, after 2007, after my first year in Euro Series, I had budget issue. I lost Red Bull after a few races in 2008, because also I had to bring a part of the budget, which I didn't find. And after I raced just there and there in Euro Series, and then I had no budget at all, and I was invited by teams in Formula 3 that wanted to improve the car and the results. So it always went well. So I got other more drives in F3, and I finally got a full year in F3, in German F3, which I won. So
Now, you had 6 wins and you were on the podium in half the races. What were the best wins for you?
Anyways, this championship, it was all about winning the championship. If I was second, it would have been last for me, because stepping down from Euro Series and with the experience, and the only goal was to win. So it's to win the championship that was the main thing.
Okay, good. Now, in 2011, you were in GP3. How does that car compare to the F3 car, and how was your season in GP3?
The car for me was too easy to drive. That means it was very hard for a driver to make the difference. It was all about the team. I did the first race with Carlin, I did pole, and then I finished on the podium. But again, budget issues made that I couldn't continue. So then I finished the season with Adax. Was always quick in qualifying, but in the races we always struggled with the tires. So at the end, my position in the championship was quite bad.
Now, last year you won a race in GP2. How was that feeling like? Because that's as big as you can get before you get to Formula 1.
Yeah, it was great, because end of 2011 I got the opportunity to finally drive a GP2. And I also made my first race in Abu Dhabi. I finished on the podium on my first weekend. And then it was again looking quite difficult for the 2012 season because of budget issues. So so I got always last-minute drives, on the Thursday before the weekend. And but to have a win, especially as a rookie, I was the only one with Calado to have a win as a rookie. So, it was great, and that helped me to get the drive this year as well.
I watched that race on the web, and I was very happy for you. It was a very impressive win. Now, you mentioned about Red Bull. How did you join that group? Did they call you, or you called them? Tell us a little bit background on how you got into Red Bull.
Yeah, actually, my first contact with Helmut Marko was on the starting grid. So I was sitting in the car next to another Red Bull driver on the front row. And that's the first time he came to speak to me to say he would like to invite me to a shootout in Estoril. And that went very well, and I got the contract.
Okay. And when they let you go, was that strictly because you couldn't come up with part of the sponsorship?
I had to find half of the budget for the season in Euro Series, which was quite a lot. I was in a new team, and I tried to find this budget, but I couldn't find it. So I was just hoping to have great results, that they keep me, but unfortunately I had no great results. The team was new, and it was, it was... I couldn't do good results, and so I was out because I didn't find the budget.
Now, like today, in England they have a program called Racing Steps Foundation. They help young talented driver like James Calado. And in the old days, Elf, Renault used to help a lot of French driver. This French organization, FFSA, are they providing any financial assistance to talented drivers, young drivers like you?
Driver like me, no. They help some drivers. I think they help Bianchi, but they never helped me ever. So,
Now, please tell our listeners a little bit about Tom Dillman, the person, young man, not the driver. What kind of food, what kind of music you like, and stuff like that.
I like all kind of music, hip-hop, rock, electro, and actually I like food a lot. It doesn't look like, but I like to eat a lot, and I think compared to the other driver, I had so many troubles, and I struggled so much during my career to race, that I'm really hungry, and So yeah, that's maybe the difference with the other.
Okay. Now we do a program from California. Have you ever been to the United States, and do you follow American racing scene?
Yeah, I'm a big motorsport fan, so I follow everything. I follow IndyCar. Actually, I'm not into NASCAR. I never watched a race actually, but yeah, IndyCar or even ALMS, I follow.
Great. Okay, you're from the Alsace region of France. Have you ever met your famous homeboy, Mr. Sebastian Loeb?
Yeah, I met him already, of course. And yeah, it's great, you know. In my area, we have many good drivers. We have Sebastian Loeb, Yvan Muller, who's a touring car world champion. And also Bruno Spengler, the DTM driver, is also from my area. So, yeah.
Okay, finally, how about a message for our listeners? We have listeners all over the world. Tell them about your website also, please.
My website is www.tomdillmann.com with two L and two N. So, yeah, I hope you will follow me, and yeah, I hope to make a good show on track. I am Tom Dillmann, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
Merci beaucoup, monsieur.
Tom Dillmann, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now, it's time for Tech Talk with Tim.
Yes, sir. Thanks to Tim Schwartz, one of the original listeners and now studying at the Stanford University and enjoying fine international cuisine from Peru to Pakistan and from Lima to Lisbon. And we shall be getting together soon for another fine international dining experience. We want to thank him for his input here and also bringing in more people to the show. And I understand he recently had a nice chat up close, and I don't know how personal, with Desiree.
You mean the femme fatale?
Exactly.
Yes, yes, Desiree doing some community charity work, apparently.
Spreading the love.
Spreading the love. Met with young Tim. And I heard everything was okay. He's still an innocent young man. So, Tim, keep up the good work. And thanks for sharing your tips this week with Tech Talk on F1Weekly.com.
This is Tim's Tech Talk. Greetings, F1 Weekly. This is Tim here, bringing you a new monthly segment called Tech Talk. I'm an aerospace engineer and a longtime fan of Formula One, so I'm pleased to be able to relate some technical concepts that will hopefully enhance your understanding and appreciation of the engineering wizardry of Formula One. We're nearing the end of the off-season, and that means that the work of hundreds of dedicated engineers is allowing cars to be rolled out and tested. And as you may have heard, one of the crucial tools in the design process is CFD. So what is CFD? Let's start with the basics. CFD stands for Computational Fluid Dynamics. The first word, computational, means that this is a technique that uses computers to carry out calculations. CFD can be used to study the aerodynamics of a car part long before it is ever actually produced, saving time and money. Many versions of a part can be compared in a computer before the design is optimized and finally built. The second word, fluid, means that CFD is used to study liquids and gases, as opposed to analysis of a solid material, like the strength of the car's nose during a crash. In the case of Formula One, the main fluid studied is, of course, air, but CFD can also be used to study fuel or oil flow, and CFD is an equally valuable tool in other fields, such as boat design or the design of medical devices. And finally, the D is for dynamics, which means that the air is moving. And if your car is not moving, CFD alone will not solve your problems. The roots of CFD date back to the 1930s, but decades later, it was computers that really gave CFD the power to become a useful tool. Computers are perfect for doing simple calculations millions and millions of times. So how does CFD work? The approach is pretty logical and simple. Instead of trying to figure out a complex airflow, CFD breaks the space around the car into tiny boxes. Boxes so tiny that the airflows inside are quite simple. Thousands or even millions can be used, although it's usually not necessary to model the flow over an entire car at once. Instead, the flow around a single piece or a group of pieces of the car, such as the exhaust pipes or a wing, can be studied independently. Inside each tiny box, which moves along with the car, simple rules must be followed. Here's an example. No air is created or destroyed inside a box. Air can flow into a box from a neighboring box, and then it can either stay there or leave. In aerodynamic speak, that's called conservation of mass. Here's another rule called flow tangency. That's a big term for a very simple concept. It means that air doesn't pass through a solid surface. When you look at the air next to any solid structure, be it a wing, a tire, or even the driver's helmet, the air can flow around the surface, but not into the surface. This seems pretty obvious. Otherwise, liquid would leak right out of pipes, for example. But what you have to remember is that if a computer isn't instructed to follow a rule, the computer won't. It doesn't have any experience in the real world. From these rules, and a few others, which you can find online or in any aerodynamics textbook, the computer can calculate air flows around the car, or a particular element of the car, and determine the forces, which you're probably already familiar with. There's drag, which resists the car's forward motion, and downforce, which pushes the car toward the ground. CFD also predicts the temperature of the air touching the car at each location, and that's useful in deciding which materials to use. The time for the calculations to be performed can be as much as hours or even days, depending on the computer used and the complexity and the number of parts to be studied. I recommend you do a quick online search for CFD images, because CFD is famous for producing beautiful images of airflows within or around cars or aircraft, with different colors representing air pressure, temperature, or speed. CFD is an extremely active area of research today. Some of the goals include faster computation time and more accurate computations of turbulent flows, which are not smooth. Well, that's it for this week's discussion. Comments, questions, suggestions for technical stuff you'd like to hear more about next time? Let me know on the forum. My username is BMW85. Cheers!
There you have it, NASA, another outstanding podcast for our listeners. I want to thank everybody who tunes in. Good night.
Thank you, and bye-bye.